Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
You indeed have Inside the Clubhouse right here on 670 The Score. And it's time to welcome our next guest with me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Bruce Levine, to the Alpamonte Nissan guest hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or check them out online at apnissan.com.
The one and only Whimperoo, as the Hawk used to like to call him, and certainly a great friend of ours in Chicago, an icon here as well as a great baseball person. Our friend Tom Pashore joins us on Inside the Clubhouse on a bittersweet day to talk about your friend Tommy Lasorda. Very rough hearing the news yesterday, I'm sure.
Well, it really was tough, Bruce and Matt. Thanks for having me. But I think hopefully some people that are listening right now will get another different look at what Tommy Lasorda was all about. You know, I met him in 1968, and he's the first guy that I met in professional baseball. And his exuberance, his dynamic personality was just so unbelievable, his energy. We used to work out in the morning and then play the game at night in Ogden, Utah. And we had guys like Bobby Valentine, Bill Buckner, Steve Garvey, Ron Say, the whole gamut of future Dodgers were in that 1968 draft. And I thought, God, this Tommy Lasorda is unbelievable. Everybody in baseball must be just like him. That's 52 years ago. And I swear to God, Bruce and Matt, that there's never been the second coming of Tommy Lasorda, and I doubt that there ever will, because he's just one of a kind. He's one in a lifetime, and I think we were all fortunate to be in his lifetime.
Really, really happy to get a chance to talk to you and hear some of your stories about Tommy. Tom, or Wimpy, as we say. For those who don't know, I mean, my God, I grew up on Popeye, and I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. That's the genesis of Wimpy for you, because you liked hamburgers, and that was given to you by Tommy Lasorda, correct?
Absolutely. We went out to dinner the very first day. It was in June of 1968. Everybody ordered steaks because they've got a lot of money to sign, and I ordered these triple burgers because they filled you up more. I don't even think prior to that. And so that Wimpy came in 52, and there are people out there in baseball that still don't know my name, but they do know Wimpy.
And Wimpy, of course, was a chain of hamburger places back in the 40s and 50s in the United States, and were known for their hamburgers. Hey, Tommy, when you talk about Tommy Lasorda, you talk about the multifaceted person that he was, not only as a baseball man, but a born entertainer, wouldn't you say? I mean, this guy could entertain small crowds, big crowds, fearless guy as far as communications goes, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. He could entertain presidents, and he could also entertain the Knights of Columbus. That's how wide his spectrum was, and he was just unbelievable. The greatest motivator I've ever been around, And in that 68 season, I got called up to Bakersfield, and I was actually crying when Tommy took me to the airport in Twin Falls, Idaho, and told him I don't want to leave, Tommy. And I didn't have a suitcase. I had two Kroger bags with my clothes in it. And Tommy, before he put me on the plane, I said, hey, Wimpy, what is that, your Polish Samsonite? And that was the first time I was subject to his sense of humor. But we pulled one off on him. Bobby Valentine and I did after the 81 World Series when they beat the Yankees. We're in Yankee Stadium. We sneak into his manager's office and steal his uniform because we knew that Tommy had plans on selling that to put another wing on his house or something. So we took it back to Valentine's house, and then we start taking pictures of it and sending them to Tommy. And he's calling us every day, I want my uniform back. Give me that uniform. And we said, Tommy, what are you talking about? We don't have your uniform. How can we? And we kept on sending the pictures. Well, a month later, we wind up in Norristown, Pennsylvania, and Tommy's being honored for the 900th time. And we go to Mass after we spend the whole night out in the bar. And Valentine walks from the front of the church to the back of the church with Tommy's uniform on. You know, and we play tricks on him like that all the time. I mean, just as recently as a couple years ago, Tommy, I was eating at Dodger Stadium with Tommy underneath the stands, and he usually comes out at the top of the second inning. And the fans, 50,000 people, give him a standing ovation. And I say, look, Tommy, we're up on the scoreboard. Those people are giving me a standing ovation. Shut up, Whippy, and get your ass in the seat. You
know? How, Tommy, how loyal was Tommy Lasorda? And what do you remember about his kindness as well as the hilarious way that he comported himself as on and off the field, although still being one of the top baseball people ever?
Well, yeah, you know, he taught us how to live, you know, both on and off the field. Because, you know, we were like a family. Every team that I played on with Tommy, and, you know, and I really believe that in Tommy's lifetime, he enjoyed the minor leagues more than the major leagues. Because he had that closeness to the smaller environment. He could not control us, but he could have a more of an effect on our lives in the minor leagues. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Dodgers kept him in the minor leagues so long. You know, one of the ways he was so good at motivation was one time in 1972, we were in Albuquerque, and we had lost a few games in a row. So we had a big series coming up, and he said, you know, you guys are walking around. You're not having any fun. You're walking around with the weight of the world on your shoulders, and outside of Albuquerque, nobody even knows who we are. So why don't you go out there and have fun and play like you did at the start of the year? Do you know that the 1927 New York Yankees, the team of Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, and Babe Ruth, they lost 7 games in a row. So why don't you think of the 27 Yankees, go out there and have fun. So we did. Went out there, beat the crap out of the team, won about 15 games in a row, won the Pacific Coast League Championship. And I was called up to the Dodgers in September 1st, and I ran into Tommy at Dodger Stadium. And I said to him, Tommy, something's been bothering me for about a month now. He says, what's that? He said, did the 27 Yankees really lose 7 games in a row? He said, the hell would I know? I wasn't even born yet. I worked on you guys.
Oh,
so he was
God. Ultimate
motivated. He didn't believe it. He worked on you dummies. And we were like robots when it came to Tommy. You know, when we first signed, we all sent letters from Ogden, Utah to Dodger Stadium to the guy who was playing our position, telling them, I hope they enjoyed their stay in Los Angeles because I'm coming to take your job quick. I mean, how many people would do that?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
totally unheard of. And, you know, and people say, what, could Tommy manage today? You're damn right he could manage today. Remember that 88 World Series when he was completely outmanned by the Oakland A's?
Right.
And Tony La Russa was the manager of Oakland. Do you know that after that Kirk Gibson home run, which was great, monumental, but they still had to win 3 more games, Tommy put on, Bobby Valentine said this on the Mad Dog show yesterday, put on the hit and run 18 times.
Wow.
In those 5 games, and 16 of them worked, advancing the runner. So that's what, you know, that's old school baseball, and that's whatever it took to win, Tommy would do that on the field. And, of course, off the field, we had so much fun. Most of the things you can't even talk about.
Well, Wimpy, I'm glad you brought it to the baseball, because that's the thing. We hear all these stories, and I remember watching and seeing that Tommy was so much fun, and he taught this essence of fun. But holy hell, the talent pipeline that came through the Dodgers, starting with all you guys from Albuquerque, eventually 4 different rookies of the year in a row twice for the Dodgers. So what did Tommy do so well in terms of development of players in his run and in that Dodgers system for so long?
You know what he did, Matt? He let the young kids play. That's why he had 9 rookie of the years. He didn't care how old you were. Good players come quick. And you don't need to sit on the bench and watch for a while, which was old school at the time. Tommy played you. And he had confidence in you, and you believed. And you know, that old saying, you got to believe, that was Tommy in through and through. If you didn't believe in yourself, he didn't want you on the team. And his exuberance, his energy really came, emitted itself to you as well. I mean, there's never been anybody like that before. You know, and I played for Tommy in the Dominican Republic. We used to take batting practice in his suite in the Dominican Republic with tennis balls every night. After the game, who does that? after the game in Ogden, Utah, we'd go bowling at midnight.
Tommy, when you talk about buying in to Tommy Lasorda and Bleeding Dodger Blue, he did it so well, and he got the most out of his players, as you said. But when players had to leave there, it seemed more devastating than leaving other teams. I remember talking to Rick Sutcliffe about how disappointed he was when he was traded from the Dodgers, and Bill Buckner the same way. And they took it personally from Tommy that they were being let down, not by the Dodgers, not by Dodger Blue, not by the organization, but Tommy. That's how significant they believed in Tommy Lasorda. I wonder if you can talk about that, right? And you also leaving as well at one point.
Well, I was part of that trade that sent Jimmy Wynn, myself, Jerry Royster, Lee Lacy to the Braves for Ed Goodson and Dusty Baker. But, you know, it really wasn't. Tommy wanted his guys to stay. You know, Al Campanis was a great general manager at the time, and Al made the trades. Tommy, you know, was, I don't even know if he was consulted on some of these trades.
Right.
Because that's the way they operated back then. And, you know, I remember when the one story about Al Campanis is after the 72 season that I was alluding to earlier in Albuquerque, Al called Tommy in for a conference. He says, Tommy, we got 7 to 9 guys who are going to play in the big leagues off your Albuquerque team next year, and I want to reward you. So I'm going to give you a $500 bonus for developing these guys. He said, but don't tell anybody. And Tommy says, you know, don't worry about that, because I'm just as embarrassed about it as you are.
$500.
Yeah. And incidentally, our 1970 team, the Spokane Indians, was voted the greatest minor league team ever. So, you know, that was a lineage that we had. That, and, you know, back then you were put 5 years in the minor leagues. But, you know, I didn't mind, because I was with Tommy. You're making zero money, $800 a month, starting off at $500 a month. It didn't really matter. And, you know, when I was with the Dodgers for 3 years, every Saturday afternoon, we would have a Pepsi baseball clinic, Dodger Pepsi baseball clinic, in the morning after a night game at Dodger Stadium. And we'd drive out to San Bernardino, Riverside, California, and we'd get paid $50. And you imagine doing that today? And then we'd come back in our Dodger uniform, stop at a Burger King or something, and ask the people for a free hamburger. That was a typical Saturday afternoon with us. We were always with Tommy. And, getting up 5 o'clock in the morning to do this and then play a night game on Saturday was nothing.
Hey, Wimpy, can you confirm a story that I've heard? Well, just it's not even a story. It's just the way he lived life. That Tommy used to just go to these great Italian restaurants with 8x10 glossies in hand and be able to sign and enjoy the dinner. And if so, did you go to some of those Italian restaurants with him in Chicago? Because I imagine any restaurant would be thrilled to see Tommy Lasorda walking in.
Well, Kelly Mundelli was a favorite spot in Chicago. And I guarantee you, if Tommy paid for a meal, he didn't come back to that place. Picking up a check, as Tommy would say, he went after a check like a double amputee. So you know, and I don't even think he needed the pictures either, because he was You know, he was so charismatic, and he dealt with people. I don't think, as Bobby pointed out, Valentine said that nobody took more pictures and signed more autographs than Tommy Lasorda. Because he told us, he said, you sign every autograph that every kid wants from you, because if you don't, that kid's going to hate you the rest of his life, and he's going to tell all his friends about you, so they're going to be an army of people disliking you. So you sign those autographs, and we took that to heart.
Tommy, in closing with you, what do you think, I mean, is there a way to sum up Tommy Lasorda in just a couple of paragraphs, or is it too vast to be able to pay tribute to him that way?
Well, you know, I made the mistake this morning, Bruce, of putting My Way on by Frank Sinatra, and I started crying like a baby, and he did it his way. I mean, he enjoyed life. He loved life to the fullest. He lived every day to the max, on the baseball field and off the field. And, you know, there's just never going to be another one. Never.
Tommy, that's okay. We appreciate your time and the always 100% exuberance that you put into talking to us, and certainly talking about this guy that had such a great impact on baseball, but more importantly for you personally. Thanks again for joining us. Wimpy, we'll talk to you soon. Stay happy and healthy, and have a great day. Okay?
God bless you all, and to say hello to all the fans and all the great White Sox fans in Chicago. Have a great year, Matt and Bruce.
Hey, right, thank you so
again.
Much, Wimpy. Thanks for the candor and the realness. And
there
that's
you go.
A guy
you made, you made him cry, man.
Yeah, now you know
how I feel every day, every Saturday morning.
that 8 o'clock pre-show call. Bruce is crying again.
Right. But, you know, a great reminiscence of from Tommy Pachorek on Tom Lasorda. I have a lot of Tommy Lasorda stories. I think we'll have to wait with those a little bit. We're going to talk to Tim Mead, from the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, the bottom of the hour. Maybe in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll get into some of those.
That sounds good to me. I want to make sure that people know the breaking news that happened about 20 minutes ago or so, that Kyle Schwarber has signed a one-year deal with the Washington Nationals, officially ending his time with the Cubs. There was some speculation that they might be able to talk and come back to a deal, but a one-year prove-it contract for Kyle Schwarber and the Nationals. We don't know if there's going to be a DH in the National League, Bruce, but he'll play left field. Juan Soto played right field for 3 years in the minors, played the last six games of the 2020 season in right field for the Nationals. So now they've got Schwarber to play for his old bench coach under Joe Maddon, Dave Martinez, there in Washington. We'll have some time to talk about that as well in the 11th.
Yeah, somewhere some Cub fans' collars are steaming just a little bit more today, knowing that Schwarber will not be back, and that there's only, I think, six players left from that 2016 World Series championship team and counting on the Chicago Cubs.
Wow. Yeah, and it's Schwarber really embodies, the entire arc of the run in a lot of ways in the window for me, because of the scouting eye to draft him, and the institutional strength to draft him and develop him, the excitement about him that we heard before he got there, the legendary mythical stuff that we'd heard about, he's Babe, F, and Ruth, all of that, the unbelievable postseason feats of Kyle Schwarber, played a key role, obviously, in that 2016 right. World Series, and all of that. And then never quite reaching the expectations of what everybody kind of thought and hoped he would be, and now gone.
It's a great point. I mean, a good friend of mine and my friend Jeff Vukovich and a great scout, Stan Zielinski, basically talked Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer into using the high draft pick in the first round for Schwarber, because none of them felt that he was going to be a big league catcher. And there was no DH in the National League at that time, and no prospects of it happening. So Stan did a tremendous job of scouting him, getting a relationship with him, and convincing them by saying, if he's not a quality major league ball player, you can have my job. That's how strongly he believed in it. And Stan was an accomplished Major League scout for 30 years in the game before he unfortunately passed away 4 years ago after a minor knee surgery. So this is, you know, this is part of the legend of Kyle Schwarber. And personally, I will miss him a lot because not only was he terrific in spots for the Cubs, but and a great Chicagoan representing the city, but just a terrific individual to deal with on a daily basis. A great guy.
Yeah, I'll echo that from my time there in the clubhouse as well. Did a lot of work in the community with first responders, right, and putting together quite a few events that did very well in that way. And affable guy, that's for sure, and much beloved by teammates. So tough to see that one end that way. It is 670 The Score. It is Matt Spiegel and Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse. We'll talk to the president of Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame, Tim Mead, next, right here on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
52 years ago, I left Norristown, Pennsylvania, as a 17-year-old aspiring left-hander, scared to death. Never been more than 14 miles from my home. And here it is, 52 years later, I've come into Cooperstown. You know, I think it's a day of Thanksgiving to thank the people who made it possible for me to be here.
That is the late Tommy Lasorda's Hall of Fame speech. Bit of it from the opening of his speech. You heard that right here just now on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel, and he is, of course, Bruce Levine. Our next guest joins us on the Alpamani Nissan guest hotline. Alpamani Nissan is in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or you can go to apnissan.com.
A great friend of mine for the last 40 years and the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, our good friend Tim Mead, joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Tim, thanks for taking some time out with Matt and myself today. And it's a bittersweet time that we have for everyone today, honoring and remembering the late Tommy Lasorda.
It is. And gentlemen, it's a pleasure to join you. It is. We did a lot of conversations with people yesterday, and I think one of the things, it's just going to be strange, Bruce. I mean, when you look at such a life well-lived and impact and legacy and everything else, you know, it's just going to be weird realizing, particularly in Southern California, that Tommy Lasorda is not going to walk into the ballpark during the 2021 season. But I think it's been noted throughout the media across the country, it's really fitting that the last game that he saw was, you know, the Dodgers winning their first world championship since 88, and really what that meant to the franchise and Tommy in particular.
What, you know, it's, did he have the presence there among his brethren, similar to what we saw in baseball circles, in Major League Baseball circles, in terms of fun and his magnetism and people wanting to get a few minutes with Tommy every time you guys were together?
Yeah, man, he did, and I think that's one of the things, and you just kind of hit on it. You know, when you ask, you talk about Tommy, there's certain people that when they walk into the room or they're in the area, you just kind of gravitate and want to be around for different reasons, and Tommy was one of those, and generally it was probably pretty tough to have a one-off conversation because there was always going to be a group, and you know that you were going to hear energy. You know you were going to hear a great story and insight. So I think Tommy was somebody who could just walk into a room, and by the time he left any event, he'd shaken hands or taken photos of pretty much anybody in that room. But you left with a good feeling, and you knew you were amongst one of the greatest ambassadors to me in the history of the game. And everything, you know, Tommy accomplished something that I think will be very, very rare and tough to ever replicate when you look at 70 years with one organization. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to ever happen again. But there wasn't a moment in time that he just didn't feel that loyalty that he preached and talked so much about with his loyalty to the Dodgers.
the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, Tim Mead, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse this morning. Tim, it's been an awful rough 5 months for the Hall of Fame and for baseball fans in general. The concentration on losing not only Hall of Famers taken from us because of losing their lives, but also the impact of those Hall of Famers, so enormous. Can you talk a little bit about that and the impact on the Hall of Fame, as well as you and Jane so personally losing so many close friends?
Now, Bruce, I appreciate it. Obviously, for the Hall, now that's eight, starting with Al Kaline last year in a very short period of time. It's difficult for the fraternity. You tend to look at, we've lost a lot of baseball royalty, not just Hall of Famers, but in addition to being Hall of Famers, we've lost good people. We tend to look at their careers, and you realize that most of them were, finished their careers in their mid to late 30s. And then there was a second life, and most of them went on and had successful careers in broadcasting and business. Were certainly good husbands and fathers and impacted their communities. So I think for the fraternity itself, when I started, we had jumped up to 82 living Hall of Famers, and we're at 74, and I think now. And when you look at the fraternity itself, anytime you have a group or a team, that closeness, when you lose a member, particularly a member you're so close to, it affects you. And, this has just been a very difficult time, and I've had conversations with, several of the Hall of Famers, and you look at your own mortality and you look at your own legacy. You also look at it's the impetus to continue to live each day of your life that you're blessed with. For the Hall itself, part of our charge is certainly the history of the game, the continuation of the legacy of the 333 members that are enshrined in the Hall, and make sure now with the passing that those stories continue to be told via our social media, our internet, our library, and all the resources we have. But, these are lives, not just careers, but these are lives well lived. Hmm. And their impact is going to be felt, for generations to come, as far as I'm concerned.
Tim, it's well said, and just a lot of the losses have hurt so much more in the baseball sense, I think, because we're not around each other and seeing each other at ball games and interacting and having a vibrant interpersonal life like that. And when it comes to the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, I treasure my visits there. I remember going with my dad as a kid, and you get the hand stamp, and we went back and forth like four times each day, pausing for meals and naps and whatever we needed as we just took it in as much as possible. So it must be difficult up there without that steady stream of people coming through the Hall of Fame and Museum, Tim.
It really is, Matt, and that's a great question and comment. It is. We miss the people. Obviously, this is when you come to Cooperstown, you want to come to Cooperstown. You're a baseball person for the most part. You just are. And we've received a lot of emails that something's missed, has been missed in people's lives and made plans. There's if you look back, we have three organizations that have a 12 and 12-year-old leagues in the tournaments that drew on a weekly basis about 164 teams for almost 13 weeks. All those kids missed the opportunity to come play here in Cooperstown and then come and visit the Hall of Fame and learn a little bit of history as well. So there's a lot of things missing, and I think you're almost alluding to something that's really important. One of the great things about the game of baseball, and Bruce, for all your 40 years and everything you've been doing, it's the relationships. Mm-hmm. And relationships are talking, when you get baseball people together, it's about remembering that game. And I spent a lot of time last night on Twitter, and certainly all the accolades and memories provided by media people and their dealings with Tommy was one thing. And you read the same about the other seven who passed. But really what's interesting to me is to read the comments from fans. You know, I remember, you know, Lou Brock in 68 stealing a base in the World Series. And it's a reflection because it allows us to go back to our youth. You know, someone's passing in the present is, it's the impetus again for a trip down memory lane from our youth to present. And I think that there's a lot of reflection when we lose people. And, you know, we certainly do it in our everyday lives. And we lose a family member, we go back to the great memories and the great experiences. And baseball provides that as well for, to me, millions of people.
To me, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame on Inside the Clubhouse for just a few more minutes with Matt and Bruce. We're here with you 52 weeks out of the year, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, talking baseball, the diamond of all sports. Tim, tell us about some of the virtual ways that people can enjoy the Hall of Fame, knowing that you know, trips there right now are not allowed, and we're hoping that you have the double induction here sometime during the summer. But what are some of the virtual things, the really nice things that people can involve with the Hall of Fame right now?
Well, Bruce, I appreciate you asking. And the one thing to keep in mind that we were closed 102 days. So outside of 1939, we had only our second opening in June. But we've been limited to a 25% capacity. I'm very proud of the staff and the dedication and effort put forth to make sure that we opened. We had two health experts that came through and gave us flying colors and checkoff on our checkoff list for environment and standards and COVID protections. But obviously, we just haven't had, you know, the crowds come up, and in part because of limitations and part because people are just obviously limiting their travel. But if you still want to be part of the 52 weeks and you can't make that trek, and now with winter setting in, it's a little bit more difficult. We have experience@baseballhall.org website to go on, and you can learn about a lot of the opportunities. And we have Bruce Markison, who does a fantastic job for the Hall. He's been here many years. He has Hall of Fame conversations, and you can get the list of when those are coming up. Yesterday, we had Jay Horowitz of the New York Mets on, who had published a recent book and talked about his distinguished career with the Mets. We'll do things with a Hall of Fame plaque gallery tour and tour of exhibits like civil rights and diversity in the dugout and women's history. So a lot of it is educational. We will have Hall of Famers on there occasionally, and then we'll have our education and library department talk about, you know, current issues and a little bit of the history and bring out artifacts. So any of those folks that are interested, I welcome you to go to experience@baseballhall.org, and you won't be disappointed when you join in.
That's awesome. experience@baseballhall.org. Tim Mead, it is voting season, and with that comes people writing about it. And I really respect the openness of Ken Rosenthal, Trent Rosencrantz, Joe Posnanski, voters writing about the struggle with their consciences this year in Hall of Fame voting. Because I always have, just thinking about it, I don't have a vote, but I've always, in talking about it, kind of struggled with it. And I, obviously baseball has integrity, sportsmanship, character built into the parameters, whereas the NFL Hall of Fame does not, among others. And I wondered if the Hall offers any guidance to the voters specifically when it comes to this about, do you continue to vote your conscience with knowledge as best you can? Some people talk about possibly withdrawing their vote or asking the Hall of Fame to eliminate character from considerations. It's a difficult thing to traffic every year. What advice does the Hall have for voters, if any?
Matt, that is a fantastic question with no 100% answer other than to say that those elements that you just mentioned are what's important. Those are kind of the criteria for your vote. I am impressed, if that's the right word, and respectful of the people that look at it, and I think, which basically covers 100% of the electorate, and their decision making. And, you know, as we've learned in our society today, we just all don't see things the same way. And that can be unfortunate, and that can be good. Different generations. Bruce went from, your time and your experience to how you might see somebody might see the game today, or individuals, and they've only been around 15 years covering the game, is certainly going to be different. Our life experiences make some of this voting tough. So our guidance really would be to follow the criteria to the best of your interpretation. Right now, when you're talking about the voting season being the BBWA vote, we really, we're kind of neutral when it comes to the Veterans Committee and the 16-person electorate. Even the integrity with those issues or with that ballot, we try not to influence. I think it's, look, Matt, there's some writers or members of the BBWA who want their votes public. There are some who don't want their votes public. And that in itself just goes to show you that it's not easy to get a constituency of almost 400 thinking the same way. It's really kind of tough, other than to say, here's the criteria. Here's, interpret it how you want, but it's focused, it's game focus and integrity towards the game of baseball. It's kind of your individual thought, but I think your question is a solid one, because we've had a couple people reach out and ask that question, and it's tough to give guidance other than what I just told you.
I think that the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, under your guidance and Ms. Clark's for so many years, has done a tremendous job of avoiding all of that purposefully to make sure that you remain neutral and just are the true gatekeepers of the game in Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame, and not influencing how people should vote. And that has been a difficult charge for people in your position for many years now, Tim.
Yeah. Bruce, it is, and I think that's exactly what it is. It's not wanting to take a stance, but we are, you bring history here, we interpret history, in tough issues, whether it be steroids or segregation, and we tell the historical perspective. We work real hard not to be influenced by outside influences. And I think that is allowed, as you mentioned, that's allowed the hall to maintain its integrity in the process. At the same time, when you come from the club level, I don't care if you have a club that's won 80 games in mid-August. Every general manager continues to look at that club and try to polish it and make it as solid as he or she can in advance of October. You always try to make yourself better. And that's what the hall does, continues to do as well. When you look at Veterans Committee and the changes in eras and, voting processes, we continue to look at it and see how can it be better and be very objective about it. So, I sat in on one Veterans Committee session, and that was in December of 2019. And I cannot be more direct in just the integrity of the process. And that is very important to Jane. It's been very important to Jeff Idelson, my predecessor, and Dale Petrosky before him, and everybody who sits on that committee, that it is a total objective without recruitment or influence, and I think that's why this institution, and that's why the Hall of Fame has the status and the importance, not just here in Cooperstown, but throughout our industry.
Tim, we appreciate the time. Looking forward to sharing the induction weekend with you this summer. That's one of my goals, is to make sure that when everybody is feeling good and traveling and feeling it's time to move, that Cooperstown, watching my friends Ted Simmons and Ken Hawk Harrelson get their day in Cooperstown this summer is a key. Thank you so much, Matt, and I really appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we'll look forward to attending the Hall of Fame like a lot of baseball fans will and should very soon.
Fellas, thank you for the opportunity, and better times lie ahead.
Thank you much.
Appreciate
Tim
it,
Mead, the president of Baseball Hall of Fame, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse.
We have bonus Inside the Clubhouse coming up until 11:30. So if you want to get in, now's a good time at 312-644-6767. You can line up. We can talk about Schwarber going to the Nationals for 1 year and $10 million. We can talk about the Hall of Fame. We can talk about Chris Bryant rumors. You can react to any of the interviews we've had with Marco Patti, Tom Pachoric, or that one with Tim Mead. It's all coming up till 11:30 and football right here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Jordan Maley is the man producing back at the station, and that is appreciated. Bruce Levine is the man, our baseball insider here on The Score. I am Matt Spiegel as well, and looking forward to some bonus Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce. We learned a lot about what the White Sox are doing with their off-season plans as far as pitching. Ethan Katz telling James Fegan over at The Athletic some pretty cool specifics on what to do. Ian Happ talked about starting time. Did you hear Ian Happ with our Bernstein and Rahimi on Wednesday? Very confidently saying he thinks baseball will begin on time.
I hope he's right. I have my serious doubts, but then again, you know, I want to be positive about going forward and that everybody is going to be inoculated in time and that everyone will feel confident and be in a healthy environment so spring training can start and not have to stop. Yeah. That would be so detrimental. And I think the owners and players are looking at that as well as, let's not just talk about starting. Let's talk about starting so we don't have to stop. And I think that's the key to the 2021 season.
Well, it's interesting. I will say this. I hope that the science and vaccine issues are the main thing that holds things up. I hope we are not held up by a desire to have a shorter season or some of the other issues that remain unresolved right now, like the DH and expanded playoffs and such.
As Matt said, we have open phone lines for the next half hour, 312-644-6767. You pick the topic, we'll discuss it with you. We're going to have more conversation about the White Sox Cubs Hall of Fame voting coming up here as well, and the Chris Bryant situation. So any topic is open at that number. You can also text Matt at that number as well.
Do it. He's Bruce. I'm Matt. More Inside the Clubhouse is next on The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
You are indeed listening to Inside the Clubhouse right here on 670 The Score. He is Bruce Levine. I am Matt Spiegel, and we've got phone callers that we can talk to, which I'm looking forward to doing, Bruce Levine, because we get a little bonus time right here until football begins at 11:30. You ready to go?
Absolutely. Let's hear from the people. That's what this show is all about.
All righty. Jordan Maley is the producer, and that is appreciated. Jordan, who do we have on the line? The chat is not quite up. Michael is in Naperville and joins me and Bruce right now on 670 The Score.
Hello, guys.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hi, I've been trying to get a hold of Matt Spiegel for about 2 years. Hey, Matt, about 2 years ago, Harold Baines got made it to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And, you know, there was some general grumbling that, you know, perhaps he wasn't Hall of Fame worthy. And as a Sox fan, you know, I took umbrage at that. So I looked up some statistics, and I'd like to just read a few to you.
Bruce, what do you think? A two-year-old Harold Baines debate? Should we
allow take
Michael?
It like a man. Matt, take it like a man.
All right,
okay?
I will lie down and accept my statistical bludgeoning. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, in the four major categories, hits, RBIs, homers, and batting average, Harold Baines has better numbers than Ron Santo or Ryan Sandberg. As regards batting average, Baines had a 289 lifetime batting average, which is better than Johnny Bench, Carlton Fisk, Arnie Banks, Ron Santo. He had 628 RBIs, better than Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, George Brett, and Mike Schmidt. And he had more homers than Yogi Berra, Ryan Sandberg, Gary Carter.
Michael, can we just cut to the chase and say you were right?
No, I'm sorry.
we only have another half hour, so we appreciate your statistical support. And Matt is a stand-up guy. That's why he accepted to hear from you 2 years down the line. And we're all happy that Harold's in. Have a great day. Thank you for calling Inside the Clubhouse, and we appreciate you listening.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Michael. Let the record show it was Bruce Levine who cut him off. I was going to let the man go. Bruce.
That's the last time I stand up for you. what a mistake that was. You're backing down and saying it was me. It's all my fault.
No, I wanted to tussle.
Yeah. In reality, Harold's in, and whether you believe he deserves it or not is still the right of your opinion and the right of his, and we move on to Plainfield, I believe.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Michael. This is Kareem in Plainfield, Illinois. You're on Inside the Clubhouse. Hello, Kareem.
Hey, guys. Phenomenal show. Two of my favorite Chicago radio people. Regarding Schwarber, absolutely. Regarding Schwarber or Schwarberger, as my dad continues to call him. One of the best days of my life was being at Wrigley with my son at that clinching game in the NLDS in 15 when he hit that scoreboard moonshot, and I still get chills just thinking about it. And it's always bothered me that the rumors of his defensive liabilities were greatly exaggerated. The way I look at it is anyone who isn't Gold Glove material is going to stick out like a sore thumb when you've got guys like Jay Hay or AAJ Almora roaming the moors next to you. And I read a really good article even before he so drastically improved after working so hard at it that actually used metrics, not TWTW, but metrics to illustrate the point. So I encourage people to check it out online. But I'll never forget, in tribute to Schwarber, I was shortly after the magic of the Game 6 NLCS, and I'm on Lakeshore Drive heading home listening to the score when the news broke, that he was coming back, and he was blasting those home runs out of the park in Arizona. And for some reason, all I could keep screaming in my car on the way home was, Kyle Schwarber is in Theo's box! Kyle Schwarber is back! Goodness gracious, of all the dramatic things, Kyle Schwarber is in Theo's box, and he is back! And it just cracked me up.
You've been working on your Susan Waldman for a while, I take it.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Thank you, Kareem. Thanks.
Hey, really appreciate it very much. And again, 312-644-6767. That's our number to get in or text Matt, as we have open phone lines until the bottom of the hour when we start with our triple header of NFL playoff games right here on The Score.
Yeah. Regarding Schwarber, I mentioned it, and then thinking about it more, Bruce, I would say that his career captures the essence of the Cubs' run, where great scouting acquired him, as you talked about with Stan Zielinski. Incredible anticipation preceded him with the legend. Those amazing postseason moments immortalized him. The trials of the seasons after the World Series championship challenged him. And ultimately, the game kind of humbled him a little bit. So lots of success, but also unrealized potential.
Well, going back to the minor leagues once and Theo having to be talked out of sending them back a second time a year later. These are all things that kind of convolute the perception of what the Kyle Schwarber era was all about. But what you point out and what will always resonate with me is they go to the World Series, and if he doesn't come back after working his butt off, not playing all year, taking those 2,000 swings in Arizona, and impacting all those games as a DH in Cleveland, they don't win the World Series. I mean, there were a lot of contributions that went toward it, but him carrying the load offensively in Cleveland, that was the key to them winning.
Absolutely. And you know what? What they had done structurally to the organization and physically to Wrigley Field in that clubhouse, played a big role in that. Remember how they had revamped the medical facilities within the clubhouse to allow Schwarber, that revamping allowed Schwarber to rehab while being part of the team, allowed him to be in Chicago instead of, say, Mesa or home and really doing all the physical and medical stuff he needed to do. And that was part of why he was able to come back as quickly as he did.
It's a great point, and it also points out as to where the Epstein-Hoyer era took the Cubs as far as living up to their potential and the great facilities that were provided by Tom Ricketts and his family as well. So we move on.
Yes. Let's go to Michael in Park Ridge, Illinois, who joins us on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, guys, I really enjoy listening to you, and I love talking baseball 52 weeks a year. What I wanted to talk about is Tony La Russa and as it relates to starting pitching. You know, I wasn't happy about La Russa joining, but he's here now, and so I say, well, let's use him to the White Sox advantage. And I am very concerned this year about pitching because I think no one's really had enough innings pitched if we have a plus 100 game season. And so I think you can't have enough starting pitching. And along those lines, I just wanted to propose something and just get your reaction to it. What do you think about an Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, who are both having troubles re-signing with St. Louis? They both played for La Russa. Lance Lynn played for La Russa and was part of what I think cost him to be willing to come to the White Sox. And I just think reuniting that brings you a very experienced arm and a very experienced backup catcher who can still hit. And frankly, with the finite dollars they have, I think they're both willing to do some. Well, at least Adam Wainwright had performance-based contract. And I think that, plus even another starting arm, will be necessary this year, given the fact that, like I said, Lance Lynn is what, the with 80 innings pitched, he's got the most innings
that's right.
Last year?
Mm-hmm, correct, 100%. Hey, Michael, that's great stuff to respond to. I believe, Matt, that I like Michael's idea. I heard a few months ago when free agency started that would be a consideration on both players, especially with the connection to La Russa from the past. Wow. But these guys will not come cheap, even if they are a short-term deal. One is a sure Hall of Famer. The other, Wainwright, is still at the top of his game, despite the age that he brings in, probably 37 or 38. So from all of that, I would like it. I just don't know if the residual dollars are there. And I don't know about the symmetry of Yadier Molina ending his career somewhere else. To me, he's a Cardinal. He deserves to end his career as a Cardinal. I hope they bring him back, but he would add an awful lot to the Chicago White Sox as far as the way he catches games and just the overall aura that he brings to the game every day.
Yeah, they're both really interesting guys, and the personal side of it is pretty fascinating, and two incredible long careers. It makes sense that Molina would stay a Cardinal. In terms of fit, both of them could absolutely fit. Wainwright as a back of the rotation starter with the pressure off to really be a top caliber. But he, as you say, he was real good last year. And then Molina, I mean, Yasmani Grandal should not catch 120, 130 games.
No way.
He should not catch 70 games.
Well, he'll do that. But I mean, there's DH,
sure.
You're paying a man $80 million. You want to get optimum amount from his bat in that lineup, and you got to be creative in the way you fit him in. But from all of that, adding two champions to their team like that, I don't see where there would be any type of downside. Just the economics of it, I don't know if that would work.
Well, in this offseason, we're seeing the teams that are willing to spend are spending real money. There's not many of them so far, but we'll see. I was a little surprised to see Schwarber get $10 million for 1 year, even in a prove-it sense. Mm-hmm. Because maybe there was competition that pushed it up towards 10, but his arbitration number, he was probably going to end up at, what, 7.5 or 7.9?
Mm-hmm, closer to 9.
You think he would have? I know that's what he was asking. You think he would have gotten the 9? You think he would?
Somewhere between 8 and 9, so he did good for himself.
Yeah.
And he also has a platform, and Washington has the flexibility if it doesn't work out, to say thanks for the memories. So from all of that, it's a win-win for Schwarber and Washington going in on this. But again, you know, you're right, getting back to the topic of Wainwright and Molina, if they're willing to take one-year deals, you know, it'll be interesting to see if the money, and you're talking about somewhere around $30 million, I would say, for the two. You know, Wainwright is not going to come cheap. Molina, do you imagine him taking anything less than $10 million a year, even as a quote-unquote part-timer? I don't think so. So from all of that, it would be interesting to see how that all works out.
Let's go to Tony, who is on the road, headed towards Chicago, who joins us now on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score.
Morning, fellas. You're the best.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. Matt is. Not, I'm mediocre.
You're medium rare. Okay. So my question is, I love Kyle Schwarber. I think they're letting him go a little too early. I'm afraid that they got so the Cubs used him incorrectly, in that Schwarber was so good going to the opposite field when he was able to do it. And I wonder if the folks in charge were getting so caught up in this whole launch angle and hitting home runs that they really kind of missed. And I see this with a lot of the Cub hitters, that when they start going to the opposite field, they really start swinging the bat much better. But they get so caught up in hitting home runs that it really makes them look more vulnerable.
You hit on something really right there, Tony, and that is, and thanks much for your call. Welcome to Chicago. Matt, the idea that they strike zone discipline has just not been there for them with the fastball. And Schwarber was one of the guys that struck out way too much. Fastball out of the zone, change up in the dirt. When he was at his best, and that was in the second half of 2019, he was laying off of those balls in the dirt. He had better discipline, and he was hitting balls out of the park everywhere, including left and left center field. So from all of that, I think it's up to Schwarber to rein himself in. I think the hitting people here did a lot with him. It's all about making sure you have better discipline in that strike zone.
Yeah, this stuff is on the players. And I think Schwarber and what you've watched speaks to the trick bag of modern baseball, and the trick bag that a lot of Cubs hitters have gotten in, which is that you're scouted for your power for the most part and paid in the game itself for your power for the most part. But these days they want sluggers to be everything. They want them to have two strike approaches where they shorten up and don't swing and miss and maybe go the other way like Anthony Rizzo's BHAC. And not everybody is a talented enough hitter to do all of it, to do everything together. And guys end up getting exposed. So it's a very difficult ask for big league hitters to do.
That's how you hit 188 in a couple months of a sample in 2020.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it can happen. Let's go to Bill, who's also on the road on Inside the Clubhouse right here on 670 The Score. Good morning, Bill. What's happening?
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Yeah, about 10 years ago, I was listening to the radio, and Tommy Lasorda was in town, and he was being interviewed, and out of nowhere, he says some pizza. I forget which one it was. That's the reason why you come to Chicago, because this pizza is so good. Uh-huh. And the host said, "Tommy, let me remind you, we're sponsored by a different pizza company." And didn't stop him, sort of. He said, "I don't care. I love this pizza." I thought that was funny. You couldn't stop him.
No stopping Tommy. He was a runaway train. Thank you for your remembrances and thoughts about Tommy. Yeah, it's gonna be a different baseball world without Tommy Lasorda's impact, Matt. It just is, and that's right. That was our great producer today,
Jordan Maley.
Said it
Maley.
Was Connie's pizza. Of course.
Oh, was it Connie's? Was it Connie's that he talked about?
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, that's pretty funny. I can imagine some of the other pizza companies that might have been sponsoring the sports radio bit. But yeah, Tommy was relentless and was not going to be slowed down. I loved. the story that Wimpy Pechorek told us last hour about how he referenced the 27 Yankees to those 1972 Albuquerque players. Said, yeah, they lost seven in a row one time. And Wimpy asked him later, oh, wow, is that true? And Tommy said, I have no idea. I wasn't alive. Worked on you guys.
Hey, we have 2 minutes left. You're not going to be doing the show next week, taking some well-deserved time off next Saturday. But I want to get your thoughts about the Hall of Fame and, you know, things like Schilling's politics right now and mm-hmm. how that would impact you if you were a voter. Would you go straight baseball or would you consider some of these things that you may or may not agree with politically and socially from other players?
You know, for me, Bruce, I've gone back and forth at times because it's very difficult to make yourself the own judge and jury. But baseball does hold itself to a higher moral ground. It does. And it's in the bylaws right there. A game of integrity where character matters. And I don't think this is inherently a bad thing for a society to do. And I know it comes off as elitist. It is at times unrealistic. And the biggest problem is it leads to conflicted stances when there are guys that are in from the past and historical precedent makes you reconsider your own current morals and like what all these different inconsistencies arise. So it is messy. But I think idealist aspirations are a good thing for a society and even for a sport and for a Hall of Fame. It's how you aim higher. Therefore you land higher. So if it were me, I would think about it and I would vote for the ones that sat well with my conscience. I really would. And I wouldn't vote for some.
That's interesting. I would purely say that if they weren't suspended from baseball, that you have to take it on what they did. But then that excludes considering steroids and all those things where people are now caught in between on the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens situation. A lot of voters that wouldn't vote for him are now voting for them. Mm-hmm. They are going to get very close, I think, as close as they ever have to getting in this year. So it's going to be interesting to watch. We have people to thank, Matt, including our good friend Tim Mead, the president of the Hall of Fame. Tom Pechorek, the Wimperoo, joined us to talk about Tommy Lasorda. Also, Marco Patti, our great international scout for the White Sox, people can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also, writing on the Score website, Sox and Cubs all week long at 670thescore.com.
Yep, you can find me at MattSpiegel670. I'll be on with Danny Parkins on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. And then, as Bruce mentioned, off next weekend. Hey, Jordan, if you have Michael in Naperville's number, I want to call him back and talk some Harold Baines personally, one-on-one with
that
him.
That sounds good. Jordan Malley, a job well done. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much, Jordan. Enjoy the football all day today and tomorrow. Triple headers right here on 670 The Score.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.